This is going to be fun because we got Jan Jensen on Nothing But Net. Jan, the head coach at the University of Iowa. Coach, great to see you. Go Hawks. Yeah, sure. Give us a Go Hawks. We love it.
Absolutely.
You find yourself right now at the taping of this podcast, sitting in the big chair in your second year as a head coach. How's it going?
You know, pretty doggone well. I love how my team's playing, and you know, we're heading right into tournaments. Even though we're still in February, it starts to feel like March, right? Every game's big. You try to tell your team when you open up the Big Ten season, every game matters, but it seems like it's just so far away till the end of the Big Ten season. And now here we sit, coming off a, you know, a nice stretch of wins and trying to hold serve these last two games and head into the Big Ten. But I like, I sure like what I'm seeing out of our team. So I'm excited.
Well, you certainly look like you're ready for March. You had an opportunity in the Michigan game to tie for second place in a win, which you did. Everybody chasing UCLA right now. But tell us a little bit about where you see your team heading into March. Because I know, you know, we seem to have like, you know, like we start to get that tunnel vision about where our team needs to be ready.
Right. Yeah, I think what I've tried to do, speaking of sitting in this chair, I think last year, you're just kind of like, it was like a blur. Not that every year isn't when you're coaching, but, you know, there's so much everybody makes of the, you know, the Caitlin Clark era. And, you know, we've had some pretty good eras before with Kathleen Doyle, Megan Gustafson, Sam Logic, and just trying to enjoy that ride that I'm on currently, and that this team that they deserve, right? We're so proud of everything that's happened before, just like every other program in the country, but you can't stick in the past, right? So when we got to this season and we graduated Lucy Olson, who was drafted last year, and Sid Elfelter, who's on my staff, a couple of great other players, AJ Ediger, Addison O'Grady, they kind of helped that transition. Mm-hmm. And so now when we're in this year, you know, everybody didn't quite know what to expect, right? But man, I love how we're playing because we're really just enjoying the moment and the journey. I think this team's doing that really well, and I think we can get better. And I usually don't. By this time, you're just trying to hold serve. I think sometimes I think our defense is really holding. It's typically we got to have our defense. It helps and keeps us in games. But sometimes when our offense gets rolling with that high-low punch between Hannah Stahlke and Ava Hayden, then we kind of roll and it opens up our outside. But sometimes we're forcing different reads and we need to make another one. But I see growth still, and we're younger than we're older. So I think we can head into the tournament play, and I think we can still really get better, and that's kind of exciting.
Well, we know when you get to tournament play, games shrink, possessions shrink, fast break opportunities shrink, and having a low post presence like you have, I want to get to that. But I want to talk about the Michigan game first. They average 85 points. You held them to 44 and 30% from the floor. Give us a scout on how that worked, because Michigan has been high-flying all season, and then you guys just cut them out.
Well, you know, I've been watching them. You know, sometimes, you know, you watch a lot of film when you're scouting. But Michigan's that team we all watch because they're really fun. I really have great respect for Kim Barnes, Arico. We have a good relationship, and they always play so hard. And to me, when I watch them play, they remind me of like a team, you know, in an LA playground or New York, that this group just runs and runs. You can never beat them, right? They play with such kind of swag. And an unconsciousness with Swords and Olivia Olson. And so when you're watching them, it's like, I feel like we had to kind of hold that first 7 seconds, really. You know, like you just kind of have to stop and try to keep them out of the paint, try to keep them from one of those beautiful pull-up jumpers, and then reset your quarter court defense. So the first thing was hoping we could just kind of slow down. I mean, their point guard, all of them, they play fast. So, we had to handle their pressure, but I really wanted to not get so beat in transition because they score so many points off of transition. And I think they averaged 28 points off of turnovers in transition. And that press can do that. So the first part, you know, where, you know, that game wasn't exactly one of your favorites. No one was shooting until our arms fall off, which Michigan certainly can do. Right. We can on occasion That's not how we're built exactly this year. But man, I think we set a record for jump balls in the first quarter. You know, Bailey, our SID, greatest guy out there, was saying, well, he's like, that wasn't the prettiest first quarter. But I think what we saw were two teams that were trying to really be true to their defensive scouting report and playing them really, really hard. But I think we were both a little tight offensively. But we had to slow their transition first and foremost. And Kylie Fuhrbach and Chit Chat Wright were stellar that particular game on Olivia Olson and Swords. They made it hard on them, and everybody else was doing a pretty good job in help.
Shout out Bailey Turner, your SID. While you mention his name, give him a little love.
Absolutely.
Does a great job. Okay, so you've mentioned a couple of your players. I want to start with Ava Hayden first. I haven't started counting her dribbles yet, Jan. Do I need to start counting how many times she dribbles in the post?
You know what? I think a mark of coaching is, you know, you kind of have to look at your players, right? You know, sometimes I think you can, like, you want to run this system and you're going to try to recruit to this system and we're going to do this system. And then you don't have the pieces for exactly that system because you couldn't sign the recruits or the portal now or whatever. Ava, she's a hybrid and she is pretty quick with a spin and a dribble. She can make a little reverse layup or kind of turn. A lot of people have liked the pro move. I never have taught it a whole lot. But Ava, watching her and getting her a little bit more comfortable around the rim, we do allow a few more dribbles, but she is, she does understand that if we don't need to dribble, we don't dribble. So I've given and I've taken on that. And I think it's working out. I think she's finding her way.
I mean, you know, with back to Caitlin Clark's range and then Monica Sinano never dribbling the basketball, there were so many things that you could extrapolate from your identity.
Right.
About the way you guys played. So that's what the sign of a good teacher and a coach is, when you adapt to what your personnel is and you fit the needs of your players.
Yeah, I really think
how
that's,
important is that?
I think that's been really important too for me. And Lisa Buter, my dear friend and the GOAT in my mind, you know, over the years, you know, we've been a four out, one in, and then we went a little bit of the triangle high post, and then we did a little bit of a dribble drive, and it just depends when you get into it, you know, what you have. And that's one thing I always respected when I was with Lisa as a longtime assistant. You know, she was not afraid to be pushed or to change things. And I did appreciate that because there were, you know, I was always trying to push the post sometimes when we had the great Megan Gustafson, and we went a little bit more to that high-low look with her, she, and if you followed our team, Hannah Stewart. So I really appreciated that in Lisa, but you know, I think all of us who are in this game this long, you have different coaches you really respect, you study, and I just have always found you got to be flexible because, you know, you usually don't win the championship with that first plan. It's usually a little bit down the road, right? So this particular year, and I think for me taking over, a lot of times people have asked what's different. Probably I put a little bit more emphasis on defense. I thought that's how when Caitlin left and Kate and Gabby, we could score like, oh man, so quickly. But how was I going to shrink that gap? Because we wouldn't be able to score with the ease or the pizzazz of how Caitlin scored. And I thought we had some elite defenders. So we put a little bit more emphasis on that. Sean Sullivan, one of our new hires, he really likes defense and he's been at different places. So that was fun to kind of scheme on that. So we've got a little bit of a differences, I think, on defense and a little bit more emphasis. But going back to Ava, you know, letting her use her foot speed and giving her one dribble here or there, I think that's been a really good thing. But if I'm teaching a post clinic, I'm saying don't dribble. I'm still true to my roots there.
Well, it was very defining about the way you guys play because it's not just catching you know, and turning and scoring. It's how you get to that position on offense. And it's a variety of things from post entries to where the ball rotates to and how deep you can get the barrier.
And I think Ava's still coming on that. I think she's just really beginning.
Yeah.
When I look at, you know, sometimes I have to remember, my children will remind me of this too. Sometimes my expectations are a little high, right? But, you know, I tell my kids, it's like, well, that's all I know. But even when we've coached, you know, some really great post players, is when you get as efficient as they get, is the model that's in your head, right? And, you know, with Ava, you know, I keep pushing her towards those, you know, 70% numbers. But I think she's starting to really understand angles. Ava was a kid that didn't play a lot of just post all of her life, or really, I think, focus on it and embrace it. She's got a breadth of knowledge, her interests. I mean, she, her favorite music is 80s hard rock. She's brilliant in the classroom, very, a little eccentric, quirky. So getting her to really fall in love with basketball, that's always the interesting thing. Because some kids come in and they've never really watched basketball, or they haven't been as fine-tuned or really cared. Or you have a kid like Caitlin that just wants all of it. Give me every knowledge, give me every drill. So to watch Ava, she got a little edgy in the Michigan game. Like, I saw her really lean in and like get a little, maybe use some colorful language. I didn't even know she knew that word. I was like, holy buckets, we got something here, you know?
Come on, it's not sweet old Iowa sometimes, right? You got some toughness.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so Lisa is your mentor, and I know you have others. The first year is a blur. Okay, the second year, I found this in second year coaches, even on the men's side. I use John Shire for an example. Having this conversation with John Shire, the head coach at Duke, the play calling aspect, your second year, getting more comfortable, feeling more confident. Tell us about that, your second year of making adjustments in game and how that's going.
Yeah, I feel like it's just kind of like it's almost like putting on a more comfortable sweatshirt. You know, the first year you get this brand new sweatshirt and you put it on, but it hasn't been washed all those times. And then it kind of becomes a little bit more comfortable. I think that's what year two feels like. It doesn't mean that you're overconfident. It doesn't mean that, oh, you have all the answers. It's just like the familiarity. It's like, okay, wait, I've been here before. And I kept a little book last year, this little book in my desk that I would just write down things. I wish I would have done it in sections. But if it was, you know, maybe I blew that time out, or I didn't like the protocol, you know, why was training table like this? You know, why did this go wrong? You know, just a whole cauldron, if you will, of these little things I wish I would have done better. This particular year, I just think that experience of the failing and the things that went well, I just have, you just have a reference point now. My reference point was easier last year and just always wanted to revert back to like being assistant. But it was so hard when I slid over here because, you know, it was, I think the interesting thing was when I took over, I certainly wasn't Lisa, right, with all that experience, but I also lost me, right? Because that was all those years and Jenny Fitzgerald.
Sure.
So that was just, but it doesn't mean my staff is great. I love them. But those meant that many years of working together for 31 years. So as an assistant, I was pretty confident. Well, we should have done this. You know, we need to do this. You know, let's run, you know, play five for Monica. We got to go. We got to go. We got to go into her, right? And Lisa was so confident with that suggestion. But now it's like you're weighing there. You know, you don't have that much years with someone with my newer staff. So even those, like the halftime or the timeout huddles, are different and processing. And I think I'm better at being able to intake all that information. So that was the biggest adjustment. And I don't mean that arrogantly. I just mean, I don't know. I don't. Will we ever see that again? We're three people that started out.
I don't think so.
30 some years. I don't know, A, if there's anyone that, you know, really would want to do that. We were all native Iowans and it were tied to our families. And then we played at Drake, is such a great program. And then we got the Iowa program. And Jenny Fitzgerald and I weren't exactly like wired like, well, certainly me, right? The ego, like I got to be a head coach. But even now with the high stakes, with the way it's changed, the portal, if you're at these Power Four jobs, I mean, even if you can maintain success, the stress of it, the stress, I mean, I think you can talk to a lot of the Power Fours. I mean, it's no joke managing agents and portal and families and circles and trying to manage it. So yep. I'm just saying that those were really unique when I got to do that. Yeah. But what's fun for me is I get a shot in this new era, and I think I'm more comfortable, but I've made a lot of mistakes this year still, but I'm just more comfortable making them. Last year when I made them, it was more like, you know, what are you doing? You know, it's like the weight of the world. This year you can still have it, but I feel confident because I survived year one. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I don't want to talk about the landscape now because it's ever changing, and we're going to have to figure out some things to make this actually be competitive in a fair environment. Is it sustainable? Sure it is. There's always going to be money. People are going to pay. And as long as they're going to pay for players, it's going to be sustainable. I want to take you back because you and I share something in common, and that is we both played for a Yao. I played for Kay. You played for Susan. In this era of what we just talked about, forget about all that. Take me back to think about when you played for the pure love and to be with your teammates and how you can continue to remember and capture those feelings and put them on this year's team in spite of all the outside noise and distraction.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
You know, I think that's probably the thing that's kept me up at night the most. Even a close loss or a big loss or a poor decision, you know, that I wish I wouldn't have made in a game. You know, I should have gone zone earlier or, you know, rotated someone. But it's that the weight of the young women and disappointing some of them, I think, because they all come here, they all want to be the one, right? And even though if you try to recruit and say, hey, it's special here, some things are going to shake down. You can't control who's going to rise or whatever. You do that in not so many words in the recruiting process. But the ease of the transferring now, and you can't fault people really sometimes in the sense of if someone can get a raise and get 10 more minutes a game and maybe go closer to home, can you really fault a young person for wanting to do that? Mm-hmm. But what's hard is what you talked about way back when we played, or maybe even 7 years ago, is you didn't have to worry about instant development or gratification because kids understood that, okay, maybe it takes a year or two. I mean, heck, look at Kate Martin. She did have an injury. Her first year, she didn't really play. Second year, a little sporadic, right? It was just, she wasn't Kate yet. Right. But would this version of Kate stay in here, or would someone tamper, or would someone in the circle say, well, hey, you can go play right away here? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of us, well, certainly what I'm trying to do is hold on to a college culture in a pro world. And I think how you do that is, you know, try to keep the practices enjoyable, try to make sure the kids that aren't getting in are, you know, feeling that they are definitely still a part of what's happening. Because basketball really is fun, but it is definitely more fun when you play. And I think as a head coach, that's the hard part because you got to make these decisions on what you believe is helping your team succeed and these rotations. And at the end of the year, your depth even shrinks, right? There's no more time for experiment. And I think that's where the magic is. If you can, at least I think it has to be year by year now. It used to be, can we do this and no one really transferred as much, but year by year, can we make this a really wonderful experience for the majority of the people? And then if people do leave, can they look back on it and say, you know what? I grew, I love those teammates, and I found the coaches tolerable. I suppose that might be, you know, what it has to be. But I love the college feel, and I think it's under assault.
Instead of talking about, I got this great degree and I was with my teammates for 4 years and I have these incredible memories of all the trouble we got in and the things that we thought we got away with that they didn't know or we didn't think they knew. The stories that come back 30 years from now when you have a home and you have a place, right? Okay. So we're not going to solve all that today. We're now I'm going to ask you this, right?
But we will find a way. Maybe over some wine, Debbie, we'll get it all figured out.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I have been looking for a break in my schedule to come to Iowa City because the ESPN doesn't have the Big Ten. I've missed out on some incredible basketball this year. But I want to ask you about this because I think you're one of maybe the only, or I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head, and I should have looked at this before. You have, well, Michigan would be in this case too. You have played UConn and you have played UCLA. Mm-hmm. Break it down for us.
Ooh, yeah. It was after the UCLA game. One of the LA reporters, he asked me, you know, who's better? Who wins right now? And it's tight. I mean, I've got to stick with the Big Ten, right? I respect the heck out of Corey, but UConn, their press, right? Yeah. Their press, and they do that, and they're so, to me, now it's probably even improved, and we weren't probably as good then as we are now, I hope. And we were without Kylie Fuhrbach for that game, well, most of it. But I found with them, they're a team that you handle the full court, the run and jump. Sometimes there's a little drop of the shoulders on both teams because, okay, we're in the quarter court. We got them now for about 20 seconds. You know, we can do it. They seem to juice up. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like when we got over the quarter court, it wasn't a reward. It was like survive again. You know, like it was like now they're coming at you with denial and they're going to do all this other intensity, blah, blah, blah. And I think I just would give the edge to UConn in the sense that that pressure over time, if not handled, is really difficult. But now Kiki Rice is something, and 6'7", you can never discount that. But man, Sarah Strong, AZ Fudd, and company. But they're, to me, I mean, I didn't play Texas, and certainly Dawn's always got, you know, amazing teams. But in playing those two, it seems like that'd be a heck of a matchup again. Yeah. But I guess it'd be the press that would give that slight edge. But if you handle the press, then mm-hmm. UCLA, you know, it's always tough when you, if you're using bets.
I look at those two teams and they're 1-2 in field goal percentage. They're both over 51. Mm-hmm. And when you look at their rosters and you go down, I think UConn has 7 players that are shooting better than 50% from the floor and UCLA has 6. Okay. That to me is where I'm hoping we all, you know, shoot. You mentioned shoot till your arm falls off. Listen, I watch those two teams and I think about execution and discipline and understanding of time and score and wonder why we don't have more teams that can do it. Why is it so hard?
That's a great question. I think what I can get a little better at, you know, we play, you know, we a lot of times when I look back, not just Caitlin Zara, we had some naturally gifted scorers that were really good at reading, right? And then Caitlin's era was kind of unique because Caitlin's shots that are ridiculous and improbable and you should not shoot them were actually fine.
Right.
You know, it's like she just made the, I don't know, that she made the extraordinary ordinary.
When did you guys stop going, no? Yeah, oh,
you just had to stop, right? And then I think that became also, I just looked at her, percentages from her freshman year to her senior year. And as she just kept facing every type of defense, how she really didn't change in that percentage much from the 3 and the 2. And, you know, she led the nation in, you know, in scoring. But I think overall, what I want to get better at is just, I think that discipline of knowing that, you know, good to great. We talk about it, but I think I can get better as we're, as I'm going into, you know, hopefully to tomorrow's practice, but to year 3 and 4 is I think that's what those elite teams really do well. And when I look back at even before the Caitlin era, you know, we had a specialist for the 3 and we knew she was going to get this shot, right? And we knew how efficient we were going to be inside and we knew who the penetrators were. And, you know, I think that's what UCLA and UConn do. But I also think that they're extremely great at recruiting. I mean, Allie's off the bench for UConn. We recruited her till the day he said no. I mean, she's so efficient coming off the bench. There's no reprieve typically.
Yeah.
Like even if you sub Sarah Strong and you sub FUD, there's greatness coming in. So that percentage just stays up. The pressure stays up and everybody knows what they do well. So I don't know. I think that, not in everybody else's practices, but there's just so many nuances that make basketball beautiful, but also very hard. And you can get kind of caught up in one of those aspects and it can get muddy and gray on you real fast.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not highly disciplined at all times, you're not quite as consistent as those great ones. And to me, we're all chasing what Gino has built.
Yeah.
It's fun, it's pretty, mm-hmm. it's efficient, and it's elite.
Yeah.
And it's always discipline. And no one, I think, on his team, they don't do too many things that they haven't been told to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
I think it's hard to be that disciplined. And I think a lot of, a lot of kids and people coming in, they want a lot more freedom sometimes. So that's what I'm chasing, but that's what I think it is like clear definitions of who does what when. And I think sometimes it gets gray sometimes because maybe the rest of us don't always have Strongs. And that's just how great they are at recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Is you're having these backup plans, so you don't want to pigeonhole someone. Right. I don't want to say, okay, player Susie, you're just looking to drive and you're not doing anything but drive and facilitate. But when you get really good and those people get bought into, like, I'm not taking a three because I'm only a 32.3% shooter until it comes back and I have to with 5 seconds left. I think that's the difference. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
Because right now, you have a lot of team, it's about they get their first open look and they're going to launch it.
I like repetition and habits. So whatever, like you said,
yeah,
reps and habits, whatever your emphasis is, however you practice. I was just had LSU and Ole Miss last week. And one of the first things that Coach Mulkey did was the old fashioned layup line. Then she put two cones on the floor and they ran the floor hard and wide. Okay.
Yeah.
The first two things in shoot around. Now, if that isn't defining about the team that leads the nation in scoring and their personnel and what is important, right? Finishing the paint, run the floor hard. I mean, I thought it was simple and very important and very much the emphasis of the way they play.
Don't you find it interesting? I think sometimes we can look at like a Kim Mulkey or anybody really great. And we gloss over the fact of why did they become great?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just not like I even thought that with Caitlin or you think that with Gino and you can read his. And we're retweeting his quotes about, the piano. That's a viral one, right? The piano, the guy who pushes the piano on the stage and talks about knowing your role. And he's just this icon to everybody. But I mean, that guy has worked so hard. Kim Mulkey, like, what does she value? Finishing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't finish it. And running wide. The wider you run, it stretches the defense.
Right.
But
simple.
It's like you just think they're great and they just recruit. And she just, does all these crazy things on the sideline. And she just is, I mean, that I love, it's just, it's basic. And I think there's a lot with the fundamentals and the great ones. They always, they've never deviated from those fundamentals.
No, Coach Daly was talking about this time of year. Look at all the talent they have, and they're mm-hmm. playing well. And this is a team that still has some upside. But
right. They
practice a little bit less as the season goes on. Because
if
she says, I put 60 minutes on the clock, and these are the four or five things we're going to get done, and we're going to be really good at them, or we're just put more time on the clock, and we'll just keep working, right? But
right.
That's the other thing that Coach Oriema would always talk about is work till you get it. Can't get it wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's one of my favorite quotes I always heard him say, because
me too.
I think there's a lot to be said with that.
Yeah. All right. So we've kind of glossed over a few things about Caitlin, and I know we could talk about all day. You and I could go back and forth because we've known each other for, we don't even want to say how long.
You're right.
The 50 consecutive sellouts at home. And what I have referred to as Clarkonomics,
uh-huh.
there was always great fan support. And Iowa basketball in the state of Iowa. Four D1 schools, no pro sports. I mean, just great, right? Always been good. We can go back to the history of the 6-on-6 last state to change to 5-on-5. I mean, there's so many nuggets there. But how do you, I describe it as the era of Clarkonomics, the greatest disruption in the history of our game, right? Totally changed the ecosystem with which we watch, consume, invest, buy, whatever you want to sell, all of it.
Right.
I put a label on it. I call it Clarkonomics. How do you define it when people ask you? Like, I'm sure you get asked all the time, like, what was it like?
Mm-hmm.
Can you put it into context?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think Lisa, I don't see her very much. She's traveling the world right now. But when we have talked about it, I think she's having fun kind of unpacking it a little bit more now. Sure. I haven't really taken that time because we got done and then I took this job. But it was just the one thing that seemed like it was to me was when the Beatles became famous. When you see all the screaming and like the frenzy, how they would go, they started and then they kind of built it. And then when they became the Beatles, that's what it felt like. You know, I was thinking back one time someone asked me that question. I think we went out at least one or two kitchens in hotels. We went down fire escape one time and we went to a back door another time at the end of Caitlin's rise because the lobbies were just swelled with people. And we just didn't like the timing and the security. We ended up traveling with three security people. One and a half for her.
Well, people travel with four. They were there, and they're doing all those things now to get from one place to another.
That, right. And I think that's what was just kind of interesting as you just started to go to places and there'd just be people waiting for the bus and kind of weird because you don't really post where you're staying. But like right now, you're in Tallahassee. There's probably, certain options. But that was just interesting in and of itself. But the frenzy surrounding, what she could do and how she could do it. And then how the team, was building up around her. I think it was, to me, it was a little bit simple in this sense. Why was it Caitlin? Was there such interest? Mm-hmm. There was only two people in the world that were able to do what, that she was doing. One was Steph Curry and right. one was her, a girl, a woman. And so it got both sides of the conversation of, hey, did you see what that girl's doing? She's shooting. And then the guys who never have watched that, no way, man. Mm-hmm. She shoots that far. Like, yeah, you got to see her. Right. So little by little, then you're going on like a Dan Patrick's talking about her show. And then all of a sudden ESPN is kind of showing, man, she's just like launching from deep. And then the persona with it. And then she's one of one. Well, kind of one of Steph Curry doing those things. So then this swell of like, well, I got to kind of see her.
Right.
And then she took care of the rest because she just doesn't disappoint. And so the fan base who had always been here, Megan Gustafson was the player of the year before Caitlin was. We had 10,000-12,000 fans then that would come to big games. So they were, ready and excited, but then you just got the nation watching. And so it was just, I think we were a perfect place for her to be the GOAT because she was homegrown. Now, maybe she would have done this other places. I'm not saying that. But this fan base and this state, they know a thing or two about supporting girls and women in sport. So I think she also had the perfect, head coach and I like to think coaching staff at the right time. But it was amazing. I mean, but it was a blur, a memory, fun, hard, all of it. But it was a blast, that's for sure.
It was a confluence of many things coming together at the mm-hmm. right time, in the right landscape with all the right people, including her teammates.
Yeah.
And I know for me personally, as I mentioned before, I've been trying to find a time in my schedule to come to Iowa because just love the whole environment, the atmosphere. And last year or 2 years ago, I never forget the football game, the game in the football stadium where Lisa said, just come on, get on the bus. I'm literally sitting on the front seat of the bus with Lisa waving as we're driving, like we're in a parade, like acting like I'm a part of, you guys always let me feel like I was part of the staff behind the scenes in film post game. And then of course I went for the record setter. I still have it on my video where I went just like this, right into the shot. I had the perfect angle to get the game.
I think, you know, you've been friends, but I also think people who care about the game, and I've, you know, Lisa and I've always shared that is, you know, that's what's fun about when you have success is like people who care, and you could obviously promote it, but it was never about, by this time, you know, with Caitlin, we were Iowa, right? It was, you know, Lisa and myself, it was never self-serving. It was like, this is amazing. You will appreciate this. Get on the bus because we're going to go play in a football stadium, right? You got to get her for this. She's going to set the record, right? Is when people really are vested because it's a moment. And I think that's the thing I'd like. I hope our fans have always felt, or people who follow women's basketball. What we have done really, we got here in 2000 all the way, been so proud of the growth of women's hoops. But I think our fan base, what I love is that, you know, they've stuck with us. You know, when I, last year, everybody, you know, recruited against us. Oh, Caitlin's gone. They're not going to be any good anymore. Fans are going to go away. But they really didn't study that the fans, they just grew by a little bit, right? When Megan was here, it was 8,000 to 10,000. And they supported us even when we were 500 back in 2005, let's say. So I didn't know if they'd sell out, but I thought they would be there. So I just love our fans to death. They are fun. They help us with this home court advantage. Our radio show last night, there's so many people that show up. They're so excited. So and when great. It's in Norway, most of them aren't the haters. But when you get really good, you have the haters. They're just there to wrap their arms around us. So sharing it with people that care, I don't think there's a greater thing in when you're chasing a dream. And that's what every team's doing. Everybody from UConn on down to Peabody State, everybody's chasing a dream. And if you got people like a Debbie Antonelli that's interested, or your fan base, how cool is it to not share it?
Yeah, I'm grateful for all those great memories. I'm grateful for our friendship and relationship over the decades, Jan. And I look forward to seeing you somewhere in the NCAA tournament.
Man,
I wish you well. You got a lot of basketball in front of you before we get to the NCAA. But thank you for sharing this time with us on Nothing But Net. It's always a pleasure to see you and to get to visit with you.
Yeah, and if I don't, well, hopefully see you in the NCAAs and at a Fever game too, right?
See you at the Fever, for sure. All right, that's Jan Jensen, the head coach at the University of Iowa. Thank you for being with us on Nothing But Net.
God bless. Go Hawks.